back to the Wrath of Khan Minute, semi-daily podcast where we talk about and discuss Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, one encoded minute at a time. I'm David Stoker.
And I'm Chris LaSalle.
Chris, welcome back.
And to you, sir.
Happy Wednesday.
Are you sure? That was a big sigh for Wednesday.
That was a big sigh. We're getting into some good stuff. So we're building up. We're on minute number 92, and we'd like to welcome back our international guest, Lee Hutchinson. Welcome back, Lee.
Yeah, total pleasure to be back and stuff like that, bringing a bit of British class to an American podcast.
Well, we appreciate it.
We could use all the class we can get.
Exactly. I've got my whiskey in front of me. I've got my battered Mars bars and everything like that. Yep, I'm being as classy as I can possibly be.
So we are on minute number 92. This minute starts with David finishing his thought to detonation and ends with the Reliant drifting off in flames. Poor Reliant.
Poor Reliant. But this is a big minute, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things going on here. Yeah, this is kind of a big minute.
It's a big minute. Well, let's start at the beginning, right? You might as well. So David has now said that they are on a build-up detonation, meaning the Reliant. He's the Genesis wave is spinning up. Yep. And Kirk's first question, good question, how soon?
Yep.
I don't know if that would be the first question I'd ask. I'd be like, well, why? Well, why? Why would they do that? How come? But he's got the right question, and David's got the terrible answer of 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's not a lot of time.
Oh, time is the fire in which we burn.
Oh. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but this my pulse starts racing here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the score is like in full flow just now. It kind of builds up to that brilliant moment there, kind of in the Horner score where it's like, din, 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 din. And it actually takes me back to when I remembered hearing this, like seeing the First Contact, like teaser trailer for the first time. I think it was like 96, like 20 years ago. They used this music in the trailer. And I always just remembered like... it going like Picard was like, set a course for Earth, maximum warp, and then it went, you saw the Borg cube, and then it was like, din, 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 din. Music, like, oh, that's so cool, they're gonna use, you know what it's like when you're younger, you think they're gonna use the Wrath of Khan music in Star Trek First Contact, and just because it was in the teaser trailer, and I love that they use it there. So it's, I think the scores continues to be brilliant in this minute.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I think it's funny, Lee, that you use the same. You just did the same thing, the din, 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 because I tried to write that down in my notes. And then before we started recording this week, Dave and I were talking about it, and he did the same thing. He was just making it that is,
well, it's like, yeah, where he's climbing down the ladder. And my note said it's like the classic bomb diffuse sequence where it's like, din, din. It's like the countdown is going down, and it's like, pick the right wire, pick the right wire.
Leonard Nimoy getting back to his Mission Impossible roots.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's peel this one apart. So, David says encoded 4 minutes, which I think is a subtle. I like it because it's subtle. A little bit of a throwback to earlier when they were doing the prefix code. They were trying to change. They're trying to use the prefix code on the Reliant to get them to lower their shields. And Spock had to make that comment. He's like, well, assuming he hasn't changed the code, he's very smart. And I think having David say his answer being not 4 minutes, but saying encoded 4 minutes, I think that's a subtle way to ramp up the tension even more, because you're like, God, did Khan change the sequence?
Right. Yeah.
I think we're seeing like a couple of kind of firsts here in the kind of the way these threads are kind of peeling apart. Because like the idea of a ticking time bomb, we probably haven't had that really since the Doomsday Machine in the original series.
Yeah.
But it's more so that you think of kind of the Star Trek movies today, obviously there's only one before that. And it, like that kind of whole movie, it's either through Kirk's point of view or Spock's point of view. You've now got these three different threads that are spanning off. You've got Kirk on the bridge, you've got Spock down below, you've got Khan on the other ship. And Star Trek doesn't tend to do that very often, where you've got these three different points of view kind of going along at the same time. You've maybe got like one scene and then it's another scene and then back to that scene. It very rarely kind of spreads off into these different tangents, which is quite interesting in that kind of point of view. It really seems to be kind of progressing from the first one.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I never really thought about it that way, but You're right. We keep circling around the different viewpoints of each of these characters, and I guess it was more kudos to Nicholas Meyer and his direction and the way this thing is paced, because it's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I do like that Kirk's first thought though is let's beam aboard, like let's get over there and stop this thing, let's defuse the bomb. Because that's what I would have done.
Yeah, I would have just been like, would have been like full Monty Python, just like run away. It's like, come on, just like getting everyone to push the ship, like screw going over there trying to defuse it, just like get out of here.
Well, I think Kirk is still thinking, I can get him. Like he's. They can get there, stop the bomb, and then still take Khan into custody.
Maybe they're just going to take him into custody this time and not banish him to a planet where he can build an army and ruin his vengeful views.
Well, I think maybe Kirk realized his mistake of banishing him to a planet without, you know, judge, jury, and this is sort of maybe rectifying that, if you were to go over there and get him.
And I suppose he's maybe kind of on a practical level as well. He's thinking, right, how long does it take to get over to that ship, potentially defuse it, as opposed to things aren't looking good in engineering to actually get away in time. So it's like, well, might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely playing his odds, right?
But David puts a stop to that real fast. You can't.
It was funny. I had a note that David said really quietly, like, you can't. Like, it was like gentle, but also... you know, quiet, because I don't think he wanted to, I don't know, scare the rest of the people on the bridge. But I think also he's like,
well, he does. Yeah, he definitely says it very subtly to Kirk, almost like you would tell a little child something like, you can't do that. You know, that's not right. And it's just he's breaking the bad news to him.
And I suppose he's kind of come a long way from the kind of David we see at the beginning of the movie, where he's kind of rash, his confrontation with Kirk straight away, where he's punching him, he's having a go at him, to get into the stage where he can kind of talk. He's really come so far, and he can just softly say, yeah, it's not going to work. That he has come a long way. That relationship has really evolved in that 24 hours under all the stress and strain.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a moment there too, right? I mean, Kirk doesn't ignore him. Kirk hears him. You know, he looks, they're looking at each other, like, you know, right in the eyes. And, you know, there's some unspoken stuff there, I think. And Kirk hears him. And I think that's when he changes his plans. Like, all right, forget it. So Scotty, and what a great line. Yeah. Warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's one of my notes as well. And I always remember that from the trailer, just like, need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead. And then I can always remember it just like, it cut after that to the Enterprise just kind of going through space, and then Khan cutting into going, I'll do far worse than hurt you. And I just always remember that just being a key part of the trailer.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because I think about this, that line too. It's how many, you know, dozens of times have they had to go to warp speed to escape something, or
right? Yeah,
but I don't remember it ever being the lines, anything being delivered like this, that, you know, we need in 3 minutes or we're all dead. I mean, it's so, like, again, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, and they're just like, oh my god. it's so well put together.
It's just so matter of a fact as well, isn't it? Just like, you know, as opposed to kind of like, oh, in 3 minutes, we don't get out of here, something's going to happen or it's going to fall apart. It's just simple, we'll be dead. That's it.
Right. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I'm sure you have. So during this whole exchange, right, the camera has been slowly panning in.
Yes.
And kind of following Kirk and David as they're talking, and Spock's just doing his thing. And I love this. I mean, this is like the moment, right? Kirk says 3 minutes, we're all dead. And that's when the camera, all of a sudden you realize the camera's, it's actually focused on Spock, and he turns around and you see it.
Yeah. This is,
Yeah.
It's almost like that breaking the kind of the fourth wall, isn't it? That you almost feel like he's looking at us going, I know what I've got to do right now. And that's him off turning. But obviously he's not looking straight at the you know, the viewer, but it's almost looking at that kind of angle where he's not looking at Kirk, he's not looking at the crew, and he's looking outwards to kind of us. And you almost kind of get your eyes connected with him where you're like, oh my God, he's going to go kind of save the day. That's his plan. He's going to be the hero.
Right.
I guess, you know, yeah, I agree with all that, but I guess, you know, as we're zooming in on him, and he does, you know, we focus on him and he realizes what he has to do, but then he just gets up and walks away. Again, this is one of those things, and, you know, taking myself out of the believability of this is no one notices a senior, the captain of the vessel just gets up and walks away.
I don't think that's an issue, to be honest, because I look at that and the way he confidently goes out, it almost doesn't need to be said that he's just off to go do his job. That where can Spock help? There's not much he can do on the bridge, but he can go down there and help out in engineering. That it's better for him to be there, you know, potentially hands-on, helping Scotty, helping whoever's down there.
Well, we know that. We know that. We've seen the movie. But in this moment, no one knows what he's going to do. Like, I didn't. I was like, wow, where's he going?
Yeah, but like I definitely feel that maybe that I'm kind of tainted by kind of knowing what he's off to do. But I think it's almost just a sign of, like, you know, in a crisis situation, he just gets on and he just goes for it. It's the same in kind of, say, Star Trek Beyond. I'm probably skipping 10 years into what you guys will be talking about. But just like kind of Uhura, when like she hears that Kirk's in distress, she just leaves the bridge. She doesn't need to kind of acknowledge anything or say what she's doing. She's just being right. Kind of an officer that I would see something like that kind of back of my eye, Spock's leaving the bridge. Okay, I know where he's going. He's off to engineering. He's off to help. He's off to, you know, do something anyway. Just like you confidently believe that with all these years the crew have been together, that Spock knows what he's doing and he's probably off to help and he probably has some sort of solution down in engineering he can help with.
Yeah, that's kind of how I read it too, is that probably people noticed, but they didn't notice, you know, like, oh yeah, there goes Spock. He must be doing something, but probably not with a lot of, you know, question marks. Like, wait a minute, where's he going? You know, it's like, oh yeah, he's going to do something. And you got to think they're all distracted, especially Kirk's like, you know, I got to get my ship out of here.
Right.
So you can almost forgive everybody for not noticing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll buy it. I mean, yeah, Kirk's focused. He wants to rescue the ship. He wants to get out of there, and I'm going to skip a bunch of minutes here. And
you can't do that.
I'm going to skip a little bit because then, you know, he receives the call to go down and, you know, you better get down here. And I just feel like that is, I don't know. I would have thought that, you know, I guess it makes it more powerful. Like what happens, you know, it's unstated what he's going to do. He's going to rescue them one more time. At the greatest cost ever. And I guess that's why, you know, it's such a powerful move on his part.
And I think it's almost the way he does it that he almost just pauses for a second, he realizes and he gets up and goes. It's not like it's a kind of a big emotional decision in a way for him. Obviously it's not an emotional decision for him, but it's that moment where he doesn't need to say to Kirk, right, I'm going to go do this, 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 and this, you know, I may die, whatever, and creating kind of tension and drama through that. It's ultimately just a man that's kind of purely determined, so much spirit and guile that he just gets up, thinks, and he goes and does it. And that's amazing, as opposed to, say, what they do with, say, Data in Star Trek Nemesis, where it's a big thing, right? You know, he looks at Geordi, Geordi looks at him, there's the knowing nod, off he goes, and then he goes off to his kind of doom. Something like this, where it's just he goes off and does it. Then they don't need to create, they don't play their cards so early where it takes away the moment that's going to come. And I think it's just great that he just gets up, he goes, and it's just acknowledged that he's just doing his job. Admittedly, they don't think he's maybe going off to his doom, but they just think he's
right
in the engine room. And that shows him as a professional, and it shows him that it's not, you know, it's not this dramatic thing that he's off to do this and potentially go to his doom. It's just that's him off to do his mission, and, you know, he's got it.
So I agree with you mostly. I agree that
I'll take that for a first time guest.
No, I agree with you that he, you know, when he first sort of looks off, he's processing it as a Vulcan. He is 100% thinking, what can I do to save the ship? But then when he looks down, it's almost like he's looking behind him and Kirk's presence there. It's like when you know someone is behind you and you sort of give that sort of look to them. I almost feel like in that moment, it is a little emotional, not overstated, not powerfully in your face, but it's just that little bit of, I've got to save my friend. I've got to save my ship, the people on this. And it is a little bit, he is half human. So there is a little bit of an emotional element there.
Yeah, and it's something I suppose none of us can really say is, what is it like in that moment where you know you're going to go sacrifice your life? That,
right.
I'd be sitting there like going, oh, do I really want to leave the bridge? Just like, oh, this chair's a bit comfy. Oh, I'll maybe give it a few minutes. I'll go down in a few minutes and get it on. Like, it, you know, he's, you know, no offense to any of us guys here, but he's more heroic than any of us could possibly ever be. And it's just something that's so alien to us to be in that moment to go, okay, I'm going to save the ship and I'm going to potentially die in the process, and to go do it under calmness, under grace is just, it's completely amazing. And it makes the sacrifice all the more powerful.
And I think it's perfect to the character of Spock.
Yeah. You know, I agree. Right. Yes.
They couldn't have done it any other way, or he couldn't have, you know, Leonard Nimoy couldn't have done it any other way. And as sad as this makes me, I'm looking at my notes that I wrote, because I wrote that Spock quietly leaves, and then I put in parentheses, leaves us all. And there's no backward glance, right? He just walks, you know, he's on a mission. There's no room for, it's the Vulcan in him, and there's no room for taking the time to say goodbye. You know, he doesn't even say goodbye when you think about it. He's going to his doom. It doesn't even take that time. And heroic, noble, all those things.
Like, I've got it written down in my notes. I don't know if you guys use it in America, but we call it, I've got it written down, Spock makes a French exit, where it's like, if you're on a night out, you're with your friends, or you're out with a group of people, and you're like, I kind of just want to go now, and you don't want the awkwardness of saying goodbye and kind of a convoluted being drugged out. No, stay, honestly, we'll do something else or whatever like that. You just kind of just kind of slyly leave the room, and just kind of later on someone will message you going, oh, by the way, I've left, I'll see you tomorrow. And like, Spock just does that perfectly. Gets up, doesn't tell anyone where he's off to, and he just goes. And then later on, oh, you better come down here. Oh, Spock's gone. Oh, I never noticed.
Yeah. A French exit. That's a new one. I hadn't heard that one.
I'll remember that next time, Chris, when I'm over your house. I'm just going to walk out. Nope, French exit. There you go.
Gone. Yes. So we cut away. We cut away to some, I think, fantastic exterior shots. What do we got? Kirk is giving Mr. Sulu, get us out of here, best possible speed. And then they cut away to seeing the Enterprise slowly trying to turn. And it's like agonizing to watch it, because you're like, get out of there. And yes, you realize, oh my God, they need a minute just to turn around.
Yeah, and it gives you a sense of kind of, like, it's something you rarely ever get in Star Trek, is the kind of the weight of these ships. You look at them and they're so flexible. They warp away, they fly off, they twist and turn, and they drop and everything. With this, you get a sense of it's like this big kind of warship coming out of the, you know, out of the dock, and it's just so slow, and it just takes time to just pull the rudder around and then take a shot around. And you get a sense that this ship is heavy, and it's not just something that just spins and turns on a dial. I really like that in this movie. It gives you a sense of this ship is, you know, a real thing, and not just kind of a something that bends to the will of the story.
Yeah, I agree. I everything from the battles they've had to the way Nicholas Meyers directed, in, you know, the special effects have done, the different ship movements have been well choreographed. I mean, we've talked about how Nicholas Meyers is a big fan of, you know, seafaring adventures, and this is just another one of those things. Like you said, Lee, I mean, those big sailing vessels, you know, when they moved, I mean, it was a chore to move those, you know, the rudder and the sail, and this is just another example of him putting that into the movie.
Yeah, and it's not just like, oh, it's the warp engines are slow. it's because like the ship is just like, it's kind of on that impulse speed, and it's not still kind of some superhuman thing where it's just reversing and zipping off. It's a damaged ship. And it, once again, it's, you're telling the story in kind of visuals and stuff that this is a damaged ship. We know it's a damaged ship and we see it's a damaged ship. It never betrays the idea that this ship has been absolutely battered by the can ship. It's even though it's kind of looking to escape and edge away, he's damaged them so irreparably that the ship is really going to struggle to come back from this.
And Reliant gets its own, I think Reliant gets a nice, they give the attention it deserves too. I think, you know, we've got all this, these ions spitting off from within the cell that got blown away. It's continuing to explode. You can see, you know, explosions going off here and there.
Yeah.
The sound design's great. You can hear some, you know, crackling and spitting and stuff. And so it's there's a lot to take in while, you know, watching the Enterprise try to turn and watching the Reliant drift away. But it could have gone much cheaper there. Just showed, you know, the Reliant just sitting there, right? But there's a lot of nice touches in this shot.
Yeah, that's definitely what I had. Like the crackle of the lightning, the crackle of the ion. You know, just the spitting of the ion, and just the way it was. It just looks like such a wounded animal there, and you know, in the belly of the beast hides the secret.
Yeah. Ooh. Very poetic.
And I just think it's so true to Nicholas Meyer's vision, as you were saying, the seafaring stuff, the hornblower imagery, the master and commander stuff, that it, again, you could just take out these ships, you could put in kind of nautical ships and, you know, change the purple to blue and it would be exactly the same, that kind of, and it's almost a submarine movie when they're kind of the dropping the charges and everything like that. It really is like, you know, you get directors kind of in science fiction movies like Star Trek where, okay, they go off and you can see their, you know, touches on how it's shot and the visuals and the kind of the acting scenes, but very rarely do you get a sense sometimes of watching the CGI scenes, the model scenes, and you think, oh, such and such directed that scene. It was probably just done by the ILM guys. But with this, you know what Nicholas Meyer is like as a person. You know what his interests are. It's infused in the entire film. And you see his fingerprints all over these visuals in a way that you rarely ever get with directors. I don't get that impression from people in, say, Star Trek Nemesis, the kind of the big battle there in the Green Nebula. I don't get the impression that's Stuart Baird. When there's the Borg battle in First Contact, I don't necessarily get the impression that's Jonathan Frakes, you know, all the different other movies. I don't get sometimes the impression that's the director is fully putting his fingerprints over those action scenes. But with this, Nicholas Meyer has that full control and his vision has been brought to reality.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. It's I think you summarize it really well, because I think I've said that in just multiple times when we talk about these different shots and the way they're put together, they definitely feel like, you can tell that they're being well thought out, and you're right. It's not just let's hand it over to the ILM guys and say this is what we want in this shot. It's you know, it's almost like Nicholas was there, like, all right, I want the ship to turn a little bit slower, a little bit faster. You know what I mean? He's choreographed it, and that's why this movie is as amazing as it is.
Yeah, yes. it's truly a game of chess, like throughout this whole scene, that even from kind of how they're kind of hunting each other down in the nebula to moments like this where someone's trying to escape but someone's still got one last move in it. It's not checkmate yet for anyone. As opposed to say some of the other kind of, you know, Star Trek Nemesis, for example, where it's 45 minutes of ships hitting each other and that's just boring as anything. God help me if you ever have to do by the minute Nemesis for like 40 minutes of just torpedoes going at each other. With this, it's once again, you're watching an action scene where everything kind of, it's not just two ships fighting each other. It's not one ship just trying to escape from the other. It's a game of cat and mouse until the bitter end, and that keeps you totally hooked. It's not just fighting in the nebula, which people say, oh, Star Trek Wrath of Khan, it's the action movie and it's got all these amazing kind of shooting scenes. Yeah, it's got that, but there's a thought process behind it. There's tactics behind it. There's a visual design to it. And it's truly impressive in a way that very few kind of sci-fi battles ever are. It's just now a case of flinging as many things on the screen as possible. Just now it's the knight and the crook or whatever. I'm not the biggest chess player in the world. And they're going at each other. It's smart. It's intelligent. And it rewards you as a viewer. Watch it the first time, you think it's two ships. Watch it again, it's a chess match.
Yeah, I like that because I do that too. Sometimes I'm like, this is the battle of the Enterprise and the Reliant, and then there's other times I'm watching the same shot. I'm like, this is a battle of Kirk and Khan alone. You know, it goes back and forth depending, I guess, on how, you know, what mood you're in. But yeah, agreed. So here we go. We've been talking about it, right? The we get another shot of the Genesis torpedo, you know, starting to smoke and do all of its things. But then we cut to the music and Spock descending the ladder.
Yes.
That's the thing we all been talking about. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. That alien score kicking in again.
Yes.
I was at Aliens Live a few weeks ago down in London at the Albert Hall where they played the score live to the movie. And when it got to like kind of the climax of Aliens and it was like playing the alien scene, I just closed my eyes and was thinking, it's great to hear the Wrath of Khan music live again.
Nice. So yeah, I think this is, I think even just this one moment of Spock descending the ladder is a nice touch. You know, they didn't have to necessarily show this, but we know that the turbo lifts are down because of the damage that the Enterprise sustained, and so having him head down this way, I think it was just a nice touch.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's practical as well. It's a bit more dramatic as well. It's making use of the set as opposed to you could have him come out of the turbo lift and walk out. Once again, it's like, well, you've got these ladders, use them. Why not? It's like it's that kind of practical ideas that Nicholas Meyer brings to it is all that, yeah, you could take the kind of lazy approach, you could have someone come out of a lift, or you can make use of the set, play with things. That's, you can see his passion for like theater and stage, that you don't put something in the scene, whether it's a ladder or whether it's a table or whatever, and you don't use it, you make use of it, you add it to the scene, you don't just have it there as kind of visual background. It's practical and it has to be used.
Well, back to your point about you know, using the ladders and how broken and beaten the Enterprise is. This is just another showing of how, you know, he could have just gotten in the turbo lift and he could have arrived in engineering, like you said, but no, they're actually showing you like they don't have power. There is no escape. Like, I mean, that's basically it. It's just, there's nothing, there's no power, no nothing.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I think they do that's great here is, you know, we get Spock descending the ladder, opens a hatch, and then it cuts away to an exterior shot of the Enterprise, and the camera's way down low, we're below the Enterprise, and all of a sudden you get a sense of, oh, I know where Spock is. He's descending down, really is descending down the neck, right, of the Enterprise, and it kind of gives you that, oh my God, yeah, how long is it going to take him to walk and climb ladders to get down to the engine room? That's all, you know what I mean? That just gives you, all these like subtle ways of amping up the tension. Because you're like, yeah, hurry, go faster.
Yes.
Faster, faster, must go faster.
Yeah. But then he gets to the engine room, and I got to say, this one does, I get a little bit of like, wait a minute. He gets down the engine room, and it looks like everything's normal, doesn't it? You got cadets at stations, everything's lit. I don't see any smoke or any kind of battle damage or anything. It looks like it's just a regular day.
Well, you know, I go back to like what, you know, Scotty says, you know, it's lit up like a Christmas tree, and you know, like I expect wires to be all over the place, like falling from the ceiling. Yeah, like you said, Chris, smoke everywhere, just billowing, and you know, people, like we originally seen when they first got hit, you know, people dragging other people. Like there's no McCoys down there, but there's really no like medical personnel, and it's just sort of like, okay, business as usual.
Yeah, it's a little, I will say, I've never noticed that before. So
I've never noticed that either.
Yeah, only because I'm looking at it a minute at a time.
Right.
Like I said, I'm still, as we're talking about it, you can probably hear it in my voice, I'm on the edge of my seat with these minutes. And so I've never once really noticed this fact that, oh yeah, everything looks normal there.
Yeah.
But
as soon as he gets down and then we get a glimpse of that rear of the Reliant, we get that another version of Khan's music, you know, doo 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 doo. You know, it's just Khan's not done yet, you know, let's not forget about him.
And they're not, as saying, the Enterprise isn't safe by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. So actually the score again reflects that Khan's got the superiority here, that, you know, it's against race against time for the Enterprise to escape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great shot. It's I've been talking about it. I think they got a, it's got a little bit of the Reliant's got a little bit of a drift in it. You know, I was telling it, oh, it'd be nice to see it kind of spinning end over end or something because it's so badly damaged. But it definitely looks askew in this shot. So I do enjoy this one, and I love seeing things on fire with battle damage. So that's it, right? That's the end of this minute too. Man,
yes,
time's running out for Kirk and Spock.
Yes. All right. Well, do you guys have any other notes for this one?
No, I'm all good.
Yep, all good here.
All right. Well, Lee, why don't you share with folks where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. You can find me at Star Trek VHS. You can find me on my own podcast, Filibuster, where we talk about geek culture and Star Trek every once in a while. And you can find me on our Next Generation podcast, Earl Grey, on the Trek FM network.
Awesome. So yeah, definitely check him out, guys. You can find us online at the usual places, Twitter, we're WOK Minute, Instagram, and on Facebook, you can join the Wrath of Khan Minute Listener Federation and share your favorite moments and favorite minutes of the film and talk about Star Trek things in general. And we are going to be back again on Friday with Minute 93 of Star Trek 2 here at the Wrath of Khan Minute.